In 2016, the president-elect of the United States openly called for segregation and deportation based on race and religion. Meanwhile, inequalities in education, housing, health care, and the job market continue to prevail, while increased insecurity and fear have led to an epidemic of scapegoating and harassment of people of color. Yet recent polls show that only 31% of white people in the United States believe racism is a major societal problem. At the same time, resistance is strong, as highlighted by indigenous struggles for land and sovereignty and the movement for black lives. Paul Kibble's book, Uprooting Racism, offers a framework around neoliberalism and interpersonal, institutional, and cultural racism, along with stories of resistance and white solidarity. It provides tools and advice on how white people can work as allies for racial justice. Paul Kibble has been a social justice activist, a nationally and internationally recognized anti-racism educator. He is the author of the book Uprooting Racism, which has just been released in its fourth revised and updated edition. It's published by New Society, and we welcome Paul Kibble to the program this morning. Paul, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Very nice to have you. So, I'm looking at I read the book, and I just can't get over, even in the introduction, I was talking about things that were happening, you know, a year ago. But we look where we are today, just the president's tweets from this morning of putting out anti-Muslim videos. What is, to your mind, and looking at this issue for a very long time, on this day, on the 29th of November, 2017, where are we? Are we in a very dangerous place? Because it seems like it.
That's a complicated question, which I'll try to answer. I think there's a couple things we have to realize. First of all, that the foundations of our country are built on racism, on the theft of Native American land, genocide, and the enslavement of Africans. So racism is deep in the core of our culture. And so that what's happening today is a result of this long history, this legacy that we haven't yet dealt with. At the same time, over the last 50 years, the ruling class has been increasingly targeting strategically, using race and other differences to divert our attention from the increasing concentration of wealth in this country. We have such inequality that now it was just reported a week or two ago that three white male Christian men own as much wealth as half of the U.S. population. That is, those three men, billionaires, own as much wealth as 160 million people in this country. So we have an incredible concentration of wealth. We have rollback on our civil rights and human rights. And at the same time, our attention is directed at scapegoating recent immigrants or Muslims or people of color in general, black people in particular. So, yeah, I think it is a very important time. The policies of the current administration are very obviously racist in rhetoric and in impact. And at the same time, we have a whole new generation of people of color rising up and organizing, and a new generation of white people who are concerned about what's going on and want to do something, want to get involved. So this is a time of crisis, but it's also a time of opportunity.
At what point did you want to write this book and take a look at what white people can do to work for racial justice? At what was the tipping point for you of wanting to address this in a scholarly way?
Well, I'd been working on racial justice issues for a long time, and it wasn't a book that I wanted to write. I really wanted somebody else to write it. And I kept saying, you know, it was a book I wanted to hand people after I had conversations or did workshops and talks. And I kept saying, well, somebody else will do it better, and somebody else knows more than I can't do, and I can't do it all. It won't be perfect. I'll get criticized. I'll make mistakes. I had all these reasons for not writing it. And then I realized that those were the same reasons that white people were giving me in workshops about reasons they weren't getting involved in racial justice work. And that the real issue is that as white people, we need to step up and do what we can to be part of the solution. And that, and writing the book was something that I could contribute. So it was clear that there's always been a tradition of white people, some white people who have stepped up and worked for racial justice in this country back to the colonial days and the abolition movement, civil rights movement. But there's it's always been a small number of folks, and most of us have been on feeling like we're on the sidelines, we're not really involved, that we're not implicated in the system, we're not hurt by the system. And so I felt that it's really important that as white people, we realize not just how we benefit personally from racism in various ways, but what it costs us as white people and what our role is to be able to step up as allies in the struggle for racial justice.
Culturally, do we do enough in our education system to educate young people about racism, about being white, being black, being of color?
It's not really a question of doing enough. We're actually in working counter. We're perpetuating racism in so much of our educational system.
How so?
Young people today grow up with a tremendously misinformed understanding of U.S. history and of the current political reality in our country. And they don't get critical thinking skills about the media and the culture that they're immersed in. So they're not able to think about and understand and analyze all of the misinformation and stereotypes and that come at us every day just through video games and cartoons and advertisements and music and all kinds of things. So we're a long way from not doing enough. We're in fact reinforcing the legacy of cultural racism.
Okay, so how do we get better at that? What do we do? What's step one in tackling that?
Well, I think there's two things. First of all, we have to seriously acknowledge the deep roots of racism in our institutions, in our culture, in the structure of our society, and in our personal thinking, so that we can start to notice it and understand it and see how it plays out. And the second is we have to break the silence. Too often in our white communities, we don't talk about racism, or at least we don't talk about it explicitly. We have coded language for that, but we need to be talking with our young people in our families and classrooms. We need to be talking in our workplaces and our neighborhoods. Silence is complicity, and if we're not talking about racism, we certainly can't be doing anything about it.
So when you talk about this culture, and have you seen, what have the shifts been in the culture that have perpetuated? I mean, I ask the question because you seem to, in a previous answer, you talk about the people who are coming forward and are aware and want to address it as an issue. So there is awareness and there is a want to make things better. But I guess I'm wondering, as in that seesaw, is it always going to be that delicate balance, or are we going to reach a point where it actually makes sense and is fair?
I think we can, but it's going to take a whole lot more white people involved with the same passion and commitment that people of color have shown to address the fundamental inequalities of our society that have to do with race, but also with gender and the economic concentration of wealth and other ways that people are marginalized and excluded. So it's we can't just put Band-Aids on it. We can't just do a couple simple things and say, okay, see, that's, I think, what happened during the civil rights movement is even all of us who were involved in that time felt that, well, the legislation, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, things like that took care of it. And during the 80s and 90s, people were talking about a post-racial society. And then Obama was elected president, and we talked about, well, you know, we must be post-racial now. without looking at the deeper institutional roots of racism. So we need to be doing the hard work of looking at how systematic and deeply embedded it is.
You talk in the book about the excuses that many people give for not getting involved. What are those excuses and how do we eradicate those?
Well, some of the excuses are personal ones, that I didn't do it, so I'm not responsible, which ignores the ways that we're all participating in a society that we benefit from the racism in certain ways. If you think about who made your clothes, who made your cell phones and computers, who grew the food, processed and cooked the food that you eat, so much of that is done by people of color at low wages and often highly dangerous circumstances. So one of the things we do is we don't understand how interdependent we are with each other in our society. Another way that people kind of back out is say, well, it's too big. I can't do it all. I can't fix it, so I'm not going to do anything. And it's really important to realize that none of us are going to fix it ourselves, but we have a collective responsibility to each other to do what we can. And that's really an important piece of it. So I think that there are a lot of people who are stepping up, a lot of white people. And my book is really a toolkit. Uprooting Racism is really a toolkit of ideas, suggestions, history, stories, ways to show up as an ally, how to talk to other white people. It's really meant to be that resource for folks so that if you're white and you care about what's going on in this country and you know that racism is at the one of the pieces at the center of that, that you can take the book and start talking to other people and really begin to work with in supporting the organizing that people of color are already involved in doing.
You have a section in the book, and I found it really interesting, about accountability. Talk a little bit about how we make people accountable and we keep that accountability in check.
I think accountability is a key part of doing the work as a white person, and there's really two levels of that. One is the personal accountability to doing the self-education, to be knowledgeable about racism and how it works, and to do the work with other white people, to be, you know, educating and helping mobilize other white people. That's what people of color have long been asking us to do. And that organizationally, if we're involved with organizations, whether they're nonprofits or government agencies or political projects, that we need to be accountable to those who are on the front lines of the struggle, people like the people at Standing Rock and the people in Black Lives Matter, the DACA youth, that if we want to get involved with immigration issues, we need to be looking to the leadership of immigrants. And if we want to get involved with sovereignty issues and environmental justice issues, we need to be looking to the people who are leading those struggles. So those are two forms of accountability, a personal one and then an organizational one.
Paul Kibble has been a social justice activist and a recognized anti-racism educator for over 40 years. The book is Uprooting Racism. It's now in its fourth revised and updated edition, Uprooting Racism, How White People Can Work for Racial Justice. The book is published by New Society Publishers. Paul Kibble, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure having you on our program.
Thank you. I hope the book will be a useful tool for listeners in terms of getting involved with really making a difference in building the society that we all want to live in.
Thank you very much for sharing your expertise. I appreciate it. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.